Texas lawmakers are already working to try to find different ways to cut what's projected to be an $18 billion budget shortfall in the next legislative session. Those cuts will come from all areas of this budget, all different agencies in the state. One of those could be the state prison system. I'm here with Robert Perkinson, American Studies professor from the University of Hawaii. He's got a book, Texas Tough, talking about the rise of the prison system within the United States and Texas's role in shaping that system. Before we talk about the budget cuts and what could happen to the system, let's start with kind of how Texas got to the place that it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, the book really tries to figure out why it is that the United States has built the biggest prison system in the history of democratic government and how Texas ended up leading that charge. Texas locks up more people than any other state, even California, with more population. You know, it leads the country in supermax lockdown, for-profit imprisonment, executions. And this book kind of traces the development of that system that now lawmakers, as you said, are really having second thoughts about.
You, in the book, you talk a lot about the end of the Civil War and how that kind of shaped some of the prison systems, specifically in the South and in the Deep South. And Texas kind of went along with that. Did the Texas system end up leading the way just because of its size over states like Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama?
Yeah, Texas has a Southern-style prison system, but unlike Arkansas or Louisiana or Mississippi, it's had national influence. But just as you say, its modern form took shape after the Civil War when suddenly former slaves were subject to legal discipline rather than the discipline of their master, and they were convicted in droves, mostly for petty property offenses, as white conservatives kind of clawed their way back to power during and after Reconstruction. And they were hired out. Instead of sending those people to a penitentiary, they were hired out to the highest bidder. And in fact, a lot of the metal and stonework at the Capitol, the railroads, the sugar industry in Texas were all revitalized after the Civil War with convict labor. And it was that plantation system that for a long time made Texas kind of a backwater, but it was perfected in the post-World War II period. And as the country kind of moved to the right and as the anti-crime drug war really got rolling, it became a template for the rest of the country.
And when you talk about anti-crime and anti-drug war, that was where you saw new phrases like three strikes, you're out, tough on crime, and those kind of things. How did Texas play in with that movement nationally?
Texas was really a leader in it. And the argument of the book is that that really stems from the way, not from crime, really, which did rise, but it's gone up and down. It really stems from the way race poisons our politics and the kind of business of the Civil War and slavery remains undone. But, you know, as segregationist Democrats lost in the 1950s and 60s, as this new order that they had feared and fought against came into being, they really turned to policing and prisons to kind of make it safer, they believed, for them. And so the same year that you start clearing segregationist statutes off the books, there's more prison construction, prosecuting juveniles as adults, enhanced drug penalties. And it's out of that civil rights moment and the kind of genesis and growth of the new right that you get the formation of this huge system that now locks up in Texas 170,000 people and has on criminal justice supervision basically the whole population of Austin, equivalent of, you know, about almost 800,000 people.
You talk in your book about some of the modern changes being made to prison systems around the country, some because of, you know, quote unquote, reformers trying to change the way the state is doing its work, and others because of the budget crisis that many states or almost all states have had over the last 2 or 3 years. What are some of those new changes coming? And is there a difference between those that are for pure reform measures and for the budget measures?
Yeah. I mean, for the last 40 years, every legislative session, the system has gotten harsher and the system has gotten bigger. So politicians have kind of legislated by headline, legislated by attack ad. And as a result, they've created a money-devouring colossus that most experts agree is not very effectively protecting the public because it's locking up disproportionately nonviolent, especially drug offenders. And so now in Texas, commendably, politicians on both sides of the aisle have kind of sobered up from the prison binge And since 2007, Governor Perry has gotten out of the way and started allowing some of these initiatives to become law. And Texas led the country into this, building this prison colossus, and now seems to be leading the country out under the leadership of, you know, Senator Whitmire and Madden and others in the Senate and the House. They've put forward pretty aggressive parole and probation reforms that stop, that kind of slow the revolving door back to prison. They're looking at now possibly even closing facilities. Last year, the prison population in Texas dropped for the first time in, for the first time, I think, since World War II. And so they should, and a lot of reform organizations, the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition and others, are pushing to start decommissioning some of these facilities, which would help with the state budget shortfall. The danger is that Texas will do what it did in 2003 when the state faced a budget shortfall, and that was that they didn't cut security, they didn't cut population, they didn't change the laws that were sending nonviolent offenders to prison, they just slashed all the programs. And they curtailed them. And if that happens, then I think we'll kind of launch another dysfunctional cycle of, instead of crime prevention, crime generation.
You talked about what you see, progress you see in Texas, and what you think could happen in the next legislative session, partially due to budget constraints. Are there states that you have seen that are handling the budget constraints the wrong way?
All of them so far. I mean, no states yet have really aggressively attacked the prison problem. You know, in the early 1970s, the U.S. was incarcerating about 100 out of every 100,000 people, and most experts thought that that was too many. The prison population, the rate of incarceration has quintupled since then. You know, we're locking up more than half of African-American men who don't graduate from high school are ending up in prison, mostly for low-level drug crimes, even though there's no evidence African-Americans use more drugs than whites. So there are some states that are, and Texas is one of them, that's really starting to emphasize treatment instead of just punishment, that's starting to rethink these mandatory minimum sentences, that's starting to rethink the removal of discretion from judges, that's starting to think about the crazy ways that we put prisoners back into society with no money, no prospects, no medication for mental illness, no treatment, and a stigma that doesn't allow them to get a job. And then, of course, it's not so surprising that many of them end up back in the clink.
Are there any concerns that in Texas, lawmakers and others often like to be very cautious about anything that would make them look like their other big brother state, California? California has, to some, kind of thrown open the prison doors and released a lot of people. Is there any concern over a backlash of that in Texas, that lawmakers wouldn't look to some of these diversion programs because of concerns over being, you know, in an election year, being pointed to and saying, well, you know, you're doing just what California does, and we know we don't like that?
If Texas has an opportunity to save money, to enhance public safety, and to build a system that's smarter and nimbler and more efficient, doing that in an acute budget crisis is no small task. And you're right, there is a temptation to just start slashing wantonly, throw open the gates, or just start cutting spending and turn the prisons just into warehouses instead of institutions that might help people improve their lives. And that's a matter for the political leadership to figure out. But I think you've got some good people leading the effort right now, and there's more bipartisan cooperation on the prison system than there has been for any time in the last 30 years. So I'm somewhat optimistic that Texas actually might lead the country in devising some ways of decommissioning and shrinking the prison system, but in a way that's smart and effective rather than throwing open the gates. Now, of course, people should be ready. Anytime you let people out of prison, some very small portion of them are going to do nasty things. And if you use that as an excuse to undo the whole thing and just throw everyone behind bars, then we haven't gotten anywhere. What people have to realize is that prisons don't work any better than treatment. Prisons make people angrier. They harm their lives. They take away their kids. And even not the best treatment programs tend to work better than prison for most offenders.
Robert Perkinson is author of Texas Tough: The Rise of America's Prison Empire. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Great to be here.